This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's path with an S. Hey everyone, welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm Jackie P.
I'm John T.
Today in our recording studio slash group room, which it really is, we have a guest on our show today that we're excited about. Today we have Amy S. with us from the Worth Recovery podcast, website, coaching series. If any of you are not familiar with her podcast, check it out. It is Worth Recovery podcast, and it is in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, Podbean, yada yada, right?
Yep.
And Amy is a recovering sex addict.
Correct.
How many years?
I've been in recovery for 6 years, sober for almost 5.
Okay.
Nice.
And she also put together a podcast for those people who are needing additional support in recovery and or can't, don't have like support groups where they're at, mm-hmm. and need additional support from where they live. And one of her focuses is women in SA recovery.
Yeah.
Kind of the forgotten people in the rooms, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I really specialize in women in sex addiction recovery, wherever they're at, because there is not a lot of resources for women, those women, wherever they are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. When I
And it's hard as a woman to show up to a male meeting.
Super hard.
And talk about sex addiction.
Super hard.
Yeah.
I felt like I moved to Seattle. I grew up in California, and I started my addiction really in California. And most of my acting out was almost exclusively in Southern California, where I lived as an adult and was teaching school and things like that. And in 2008, my life kind of took a drastic change, and I moved to Seattle, Washington. And though I moved for family reasons and things, one of my big motivators of moving was just this idea that I've got to get out of this crap hole that I had created. Uh-huh. Like, everything in California reminded me of acting out, mm-hmm. reminded me of partners. Like, it was just so easy. Everything was so accessible. And so one of the drivers was, I just need to start over. Like, I need to just start over. And I thought a big move, like states, I mean, how many times have I done that in my life? I think I've moved like over 30 times. So one, that's kind of part of my cycle or story, but I moved to Seattle thinking like, I'm going to start my life over. Like, uh-huh. this is going to be a fresh start. And it wasn't, I mean, I did stop some behaviors right then, but slowly they all started creeping back into my life. And mm-hmm. by the time I really entered recovery in 2011, I was acting out almost at the same level I was in California. And so I entered recovery in 2011 in the Seattle area. And okay. I was really fortunate. I feel like I immediately had access to a CSAT therapist, someone who knew what addiction was, what sex addiction was, how it acted, how it responded, the trauma interaction. Like, I mean, that was my first experience in recovery was my CSAT therapist. And then I immediately had a women's only sex addiction meeting that I could attend that very week, like that next Saturday, you know. And I didn't know, because of that, I didn't know it was such a big issue that there were not a lot of support for women. Because I had this little cocoon, like I had a therapist and I had a women's group, and there was kind of just this thing for me to be able to...
That you were able to just plug in right away.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that's how it was. I thought that's how it was for all women. You know, I didn't really know any different. Mm-hmm. Until I made another move and moved here to Utah in 2013.
And we are all things desert here.
All things desert.
The climate's desert. We're a desert for women in addiction recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All things desert.
Yeah. Well, and just, Amy, knowing you over the years and what you've brought here and what you have been offering for women in sex addiction recovery, like, I'm really glad that you had that cocoon. And I'm really glad you had that to plug into, and that got to be a normal part of your starting out. Because I think it's hard to create something that we don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, as I've worked with female clients, not even just female sex addicts, it seems like females in mental health, it's a different world. And our society, there's plenty of factors or many areas where we're way too male-centric.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard for women to plug in to what they need. So you're providing something that's very, very needed and I think very appreciated.
Thanks. Yeah. It's really different. It's a really different world. I remember, you know, I just went to this women's meeting for months and months and months at the beginning, and I wasn't staying sober. And I remember my sponsor saying, "You got to go to more meetings." And I'm like, "That means that I have to go to meetings with men. Like, I am not wanting to do that. I'm
they
not
the
okay
problem.
With that, right? Like, I'm not doing that." And so, like, she sat me down and gave me, like, all these guidelines, you know, like, this is what you do, this is what you wear, this is how you act, this is how you respond, this is, you know, what happens. If they do these things, that's inappropriate.
Mm.
And she really kind of sat down and gave me this big, like, just knowledge dump of how to interact in a mixed meeting.
Uh-huh.
So by the time I went to my first mixed meeting with men and women for sex addiction, I already kind of had an arsenal of like, oh, that's inappropriate.
You were savvy.
Oh, this is right.
Unfortunately, they don't do that with the men.
Right.
Right.
If a woman comes into our meeting, this is inappropriate. Don't
right.
do this. This is how
right.
you talk.
You probably just get more inappropriate when a woman's there. Yeah.
Probably. But even with all that information, it was super triggering. It was so triggering to be in a meeting talking about sex addiction with men. And I relapsed, I think, that day or maybe the day after. Until I, you know, could kind of make that happen and understand how that worked and understand that dynamic. And then mixed meetings became a big part of my program that I continued to attend. And when I moved here, thankfully I had that experience as well. So that when I moved here and the only option was mixed meetings, I knew how to show up and be authentic and be real and knew the dynamics and knew how to interact with people. So it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
I'm curious, as you just talked about kind of, I don't know if I'd use the word more comfortable, but you learned how to do mixed meetings in a way that was effective for you. Like what were some of the big hurdles you saw initially that you had to work through?
Just using real words, like I didn't want to say masturbation in front of men. Like
they don't want to say in front of each other either.
Yeah, well, that's probably why it's so uncomfortable, right? But like in front of women, I could use those words and not really worry about it. But
yeah.
In front of men, I struggled to use words like, you know, just basic words like acting out or having sex or I felt triggered or this was the dream that I had. And in front of women, I didn't feel any struggle with that or talking about the fantasies I was experiencing or different things like that. But in front of men, there was just this shame and embarrassment that I felt that I didn't want to say those things.
Yeah.
So that was a big hurdle, learning how to kind of handle that. Also, I didn't want to be touched by men. Like I didn't want to hold hands. I didn't want to hug. I didn't want to do any of that. And so learning to assert myself and be able to say those things, like, I don't want to hug or, like, please don't hug me or, like, I had a hard time with that. And so I would just kind of sit there and, like, get hugged and, like, not hug back, but it was really awkward and not really know what to do. Whereas I didn't have a problem with that with women in our women's meeting, but at the end of mixed meetings, I was, like, door, like, as fast as possible. I just didn't want to even fellowship or talk to anyone because I didn't really know how to get through those hurdles of hugging or touching or holding hands or things like that.
Did you ever see any of the men in your group respond to that? Like in, I guess,
like
helpful
with awareness?
Yeah, awareness.
That you weren't
like,
hugging back?
You're not hugging back. You don't want to, you head for the door as quick as possible.
I did have a meeting. Like there was one meeting that I attended regularly. I started attending it regularly because there were some men that were responsive to that. Like, in fact, I didn't really understand at first kind of what was going on. I didn't have a whole lot of awareness, but there was a couple men that had picked up on that whole aspect of things. And I would, like, it wasn't till a few months into this that I would understand, but they would kind of stand guard. Like, one would kind of sit by me usually, and at the end of the meeting, like, would kind of just stand there. He didn't really talk to me or anything, but, like, just kind of, as men would approach, would either direct them another direction or engage them or something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really understand what was going on until probably, like I said, a few months into attending that meeting.
Okay.
But, and it wasn't, and then later, maybe a couple months later, we had a conversation about it. But yeah, there was one in particular that was just really like, I would like it, put my hand out when I finally learned to, like, I'd put my hand out when they would approach me rather than like wait for them to hug me, you mm-hmm. know, and stuff. And there was one that was like, he just came up to me and was like, I want to hug you, but I don't hug women. And that was awkward too, because you're like, okay, so you don't hug women. Okay.
What if I don't want to hug you?
Yeah, right. Like you're explaining things to me before you even like know my name or talk to me or anything. Yeah. So just kind of, yeah. There were some men that responded, though, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, this is something I found as a man in recovery, listening to your stuff, Amy, and having that approach that is primarily a female approach, because that's who you're targeting to help specifically. It's been really good for me to check some of that privilege and check the stuff that I've taken for granted. Being a white heterosexual male, like, I don't have many barriers in front of me, and it's been really good to hear those stories and been really good to hear that perspective to remind me that there's things that I need to think 2 and 3 times about
mm-hmm.
instead of just doing what I've always done or doing what all the other white heterosexual men mm-hmm. around me are doing, but to really think about that impact.
Yeah, it's a big challenge. I coach a woman in recovery who reached out to me because she doesn't really have a support circle at all, and she had attended a meeting. I try to be pretty fellowship generic. Mm-hmm. So I was going to say a fellowship there and caught myself, but she attended a 12-step meeting and for the very first time a couple years ago. And it was an all male meeting, you know, and she was super nervous. She attended the meeting. There was a couple men afterwards that, you know, tried to kind of talk with her and things like that. One followed her out to her car mm-hmm. and she said, we were having a conversation. It didn't feel threatening or anything like that, and raped her.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
And I've, you know, that's a dramatic story,
mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily uncommon,
mm-hmm.
As far as women trying to get into recovery or help, whether it's an actual rape or whether it's just comments, you know, like my first mixed meeting here in Utah, I got the comments, my very first meeting, like, wow, I'm sorry you moved here because women don't recover in Utah, you know, and I mean, just comments like that, you know, are mm-hmm. inappropriate.
Uh-huh.
Or one of the women I sponsor was at a mixed meeting and held hands at the very end. They kind of all stand in a circle and hold hands. And this woman, you know, is tall, and the man next to her was kind of short. And so when they held hands and, you know, it kind of put his head at her chest level, and after the meeting, he said, wow, this is the best circle I've ever been in
mm.
with this kind of sleazy, you know, tone of voice.
Yeah.
And so, like, all those kind of comments, you know, they might not be rape, but they are intrusive and they're
mm-hmm.
incredibly offensive
yeah.
and they're incredibly damaging for women who are trying to get support. So it's really difficult. It's really difficult. I also work with a woman in the UK. She is, as far as she can find, the only woman in treatment for sex addiction that she can find.
Wow.
She goes to a clinic that specializes in sex addiction, and they have also reached out to try to find more women for her to support and things like that, but she's just not, they're not finding any.
Wow.
Any in the entire, like, area, you know, that she lives in. And so she found me through my podcast, and we've, you know, connected, and I've tried to kind of plug her into some of the support circles that we have within Worth Recovery, but it's a challenge. It's a big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
One that, like you said, I didn't really know until I moved from my little cocoon in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know that it was that big of a deal. Yeah.
Difficult. Well, I'm thinking about, because when we did our series on the different steps in books from the different fellowships, we often would read from the 12 Principles and the General Path Through the 12 Steps.
Uh-huh.
And Patrick Carnes wrote both of those books. And when he was talking about writing those books, or naming the books, the title, because he said, I often have people who will come up to me and say, that was not a gentle path. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing about what I just experienced in those books was gentle. And he said, well, I think you misunderstand, like, the naming. And he said, you know, it was one of the, when they were doing it, they combined, they did mixed meetings with men and women. And he said, and we found that the way that they had to learn to be with each other in order to really be effective in helping each other, you know, and he said at times there were men who were encouraging and teaching women how to be strong and how to not apologize. Mm-hmm. And there were times when women were teaching men how to get in touch with their feelings and how to step lightly, you know, and different things that they learn. I mean, those are kind of characteristic of the genders. And there were other things that they learned and taught each other that were so helpful. And he said, and it really was this gentle process of the genders coming together and sharing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what I witnessed to me was very gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy.
Right.
But they had to learn how to be sensitive to one another and to not just take their lived experience for granted and either project it out or dismiss somebody who's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that often as I work with both men and women and see the, you know, different issues that the genders face, how much we have to offer each other, but how often, because we don't know how to do relationships, period, we don't offer that to each other. We don't benefit from knowing something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, like, as a woman in recovery, you've got, I mean, there's issues for me with men, but there's also issues with me for women,
mm-hmm.
right? You
right.
know? But I would say that some of the most healing things, meetings that I've been at have been mixed meetings, where I shared something about a relationship that was really damaging for me and was really
uh-huh.
difficult about a male relationship that I had. And it was something that was just really, really hard. And I was able to share that. And then I had three or four men in that meeting comment about that in ways that were incredibly healing for me.
Uh-huh.
To listen to a man respond to how another man treated me or
yeah.
how another relationship went was incredibly healing. I can think of one specifically. And the man started out with saying, you know, like, I want to take a baseball bat to that man's head,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everyone kind of laughed. But for me, I was like, I'm not crazy. Like,
right.
like this is not typical of men's behavior or like, you know, you're as outraged about that as I am.
Uh-huh.
Like, and hearing that, because I wasn't privy to I didn't have a lot of male friends because I was worried about, because most of my relationships were addictive, right?
Uh-huh.
And so to listen to that and to have them kind of respond was really, really healing.
Uh-huh.
And I would say gentle in a way.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
like just that whole aspect of sharing, you know, myself with
uh-huh.
them and then listening to them respond. It wasn't always the case, but
right.
I definitely say, like, when I became a regular at that meeting, the better it became for me, like
mm-hmm.
over time, you know, as
mm-hmm.
the responses came in and people would respond to me and we would talk about things.
Yeah.
To a point where I felt incredibly comfortable with that meeting. I would have almost considered it my home meeting, but I had a women's meeting that I went to regularly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was, I think that there's a lot of healing that happens between men and women
yeah.
that can, I should say, there's a lot of healing that can happen between
mm-hmm.
men and women in recovery if they're willing and open to doing
mm-hmm.
that. But they have to be open and willing.
Right.
Yeah. And I would go as far to say, like, that's not a nice perk that can happen sometimes. I think it's essential
mm-hmm.
For healing and recovery. And but it's not, I don't think it's widely accessible.
Right.
I think it's something that men and women in recovery have to work very conscientiously to provide for each other, mm-hmm. and to give that space where there can be healing and there can be understanding. Because so many of our early relationship wounds, they come from our first male and female, our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of that out and healing from that comes in the male and female relationships we have in recovery.
Yeah. I would say it's especially difficult, not especially, I don't know, but I'm single. And so a lot of recovery opportunities for mixed male and female are in marriages,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so
yeah.
there's a lot of treatment programs, a lot of opportunities for, you know, addicts and their spouses or addicts
mm-hmm.
and their partners, you know, to get help
uh-huh.
together and try to heal those relationships. But there's a lot of men and women out there that are recovering from sex addiction that are single.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we, other than recovery rooms, there's not a whole lot of programs for learning to heal those relationships.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
and to practice.
And to practice,
yeah.
right. I feel like there's a gap in the industry for that. You know, getting into like dating relationships or things like that for men and women in recovery after they've been sober for a while. There's not a lot of programs out there
mm-hmm.
that talk about sober dating or how that looks
uh-huh.
or what that looks like or how do I know that I'm treating this person any different than I did before or, you know, what do I look for or those types of things.
Yeah.
And so I wish that there were. There needs to be more for us that are single to heal those relationships between men and women in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would offer, like, I'm imagining, like, that guy who you eventually had the conversation with in your mixed meeting who was saying, you know, like, that would kind of just direct men or kind of act as kind of a buffer. You know, if he approached you and said, hey, I'm going to do da-da-da-da-da, could have felt a little creepier if he didn't just kind of
Don't
know
worry,
the
fair
men
maiden.
In the group and know what was necessary, and then as he got to know you, then he could have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've talked about on this podcast how I went to the GLI in May, and there was 11 of us there, and it was like 6 men and 5 women, and then the 2 facilitators, which were also men. So men outweighed the women who were in attendance. And, you know, it was a week-long thing, but many hours in a week. And so we got to know each other really well. But towards the end of the week, we had a conversation about gender and some of the things that were playing out. And there were a couple of the men who I just kind of kept a distance from because I just didn't trust him, I think.
Mm.
And so I was nice. I would say hello. I acknowledged them, but I kind of kept my distance, you know. And when we were having this discussion, I pointed out, I said, you know, I have noticed throughout the week that every single female here, multiple times, I said, I haven't done it multiple times, but multiple females here on multiple occasions have said to the men, thank you so much for being here and doing this deeper work. And I said, and every time the men say, thank you, and say nothing back to her. Like, and I said, I have not heard one man acknowledge that we are here doing this work. And this isn't easy work for us.
Right.
And we're here. And you're just kind of taking that from us. Like, thank you for patting me on the back. It never occurs to you to do likewise. To acknowledge us or witness us. Like, we're sitting here day after day and we're witnessing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not happening, you know? And fortunately, you know, some of the dynamics that had been set up, the men were able to hear that. And they didn't just respond. You know, sometimes I think if I were to say that without knowing them, they'd feel guilty and then respond with anger back towards me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I generally, well, I can't say generally don't say those things, but I have to pick it wisely, right? But in that setting, they were really able to hear that, and they were like, you're right. Like, I know for myself, I have not said that to any of you here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something shifted. I don't know for how long, I mean, but for the rest of the week, I think there was a difference when we could just talk about that and just talk about what it felt like and what we were noticing and what we were experiencing. It really opened some things up for us to work with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because I do get a lot of pushback from men who say things like, recovery's not all that different for women, you know, or like, you know, I don't understand why you need a women's meeting. Like, mm-hmm. you can just come to meetings. Or, you know, just kind of the idea that, like, I don't know if it's privilege, but just the idea that you're not that different, or, you mm-hmm. know, they don't acknowledge a woman's work or the struggle that they have, or different things like that.
Uh-huh.
And I really struggle with that a lot. I've done a lot of presentations to groups here in Salt Lake about why it's different for a woman in recovery, or, you know, why can't you acknowledge the need for women in recovery, uh-huh. you know, or it's these kind of attitudes that prevent women from getting into recovery,
right.
you know, those types of things. And it's similar to what you're saying in that, you know, I try to do everything I can to acknowledge that, you know, it's hard work. Recovery is hard work. And we say things all the time to men about the, you know, the challenges that they face, and it seems to be a stereotype that a man can have this disease and a woman can't, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, those types of things. And so really trying to break down those barriers
mm-hmm.
of, you know, gender, and understanding that we both need to acknowledge each other, and that there needs to be mutual understanding, mutual compassion, and that we need to, you know, be able to support each other, you know,
right.
like you're saying, like the women were able to kind of support the men, for thank them for doing the deeper work, and then where's that support back,
right?
Where is
right.
the reciprocation of that?
Yeah,
because it's something we really struggle with. You know, I've said before, like, for every man that's acting out, typically there's a woman he's acting out with,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
you know.
Yes.
So it's not that there's less women in sex addiction,
right?
They might not label it that, they might, you know, label it something different, but it's not that there's less women
uh-huh.
in sex addiction.
Well, and you were sharing that statistic from Out of the Shadow,
yeah.
the book by Patrick Carnes.
Yeah, so Patrick Carnes, I was just recently rereading that, and my first time through, I didn't notice how much he actually talks and addresses the issue of women in recovery. Again, I think I was just in that little cocoon, like, of course
mm-hmm.
there's women in recovery, you know? When I first read it, everybody knows this. But he mentions, you know, a statistic that was a little staggering to me, that in 1983, when he first released this publication, that he believed that, particularly around internet sex addiction, that 40% of those that are addicted to sex through the internet on somehow were women. He uses
mm-hmm.
40%, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, acknowledging that in 1983 was, like, unheard of. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we can't even
yes.
acknowledge that today, that there's,
right.
you know, at least 50% of women out there are sex addicts, or,
yeah.
or in the community could be sex addicts, or things like that. And so that was a little staggering to me. But he talks and addresses some of those challenges that women face in addiction.
Can you talk some more about that, the challenges specific to women in addiction recovery?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, finding support, you know, just, I mean, like we've been talking about with meetings, you know, in a lot of really populated areas, like I met with a man who is in Chicago, and he attends a really big meeting there. There's usually between 60 and 70 addicts at
mm-hmm.
the meeting that he attends. And he was like, I think maybe we've seen 3 women,
hmm.
you
wow.
know, in the history, of, like, 30 years that he's been going to this meeting.
Certainly
maybe,
not 40%.
No, not even close, right? And so there's that issue just right off the bat, right? That it's socially acceptable for men to have sex addiction. It's
mm-hmm.
not
yes.
socially acceptable for women to have sex addiction.
Yeah.
And so
I've also heard, I think it was from Patrick Carnes at one of my CSAT training, that he talked about that men who are married and have a sex addiction are more likely to have a spouse supporting them getting in treatment, whereas women with sex addiction, if they're married, are more likely to have the spouse leave.
Yeah.
Right. Leave, or, like, just control the whole
yes.
thing, right? Like,
yes.
That's the one I see the most often
mm.
is, okay, well, I'm going to put you on a leash,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't go anywhere, can't do anything, you know, that type of thing. And they just feel like if they can control or know everything about their spouse,
mm-hmm.
If she's a woman, then that will stop
yes.
the problem, right?
But often the male partners aren't as likely to get into their own treatment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas female partners are more likely to get into treatment with the addict
right.
partner.
And I would even say, I don't know hard statistics on this, but just from who calls us for help, we far more often have women calling for help for their husband or help for their marriage is often how it comes in than we do having men call for themselves or for the same
for
reason.
For the relationship, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like three or four, right? So first would just be just the social acceptance of it, you know, that there, and even in that, like, there's this double standard with women, right? That they should be provocative, but not slutty, right? So, like, you know, writing that line, I mean, that's really difficult for a woman.
Which is an arbitrary line that changes depending on how you want
who
that
you
woman
are
to feel.
And who you're with and what, you know, what's going on, right?
What day of the week it is.
So the social acceptability for men, you know, is a little bit easier than it is for women in general, just to admit that that's what's going on. Second, I would say, like, just the circumstances that they're in. Because like you're saying, you know, if it's a male sex addict, the woman is most likely to stay, most likely to support, and most likely to get into treatment with their husband, right? I mean, that's just how it works. But the reverse situation, you know, women in recovery, women who are the addict, their husband is less likely to support them getting into a program, less likely to support them going to meetings, especially if it's a mixed meeting, right? And since there's not a lot of women's meetings to begin with, I mean, that pretty much eliminates their possibility for getting into at least a 12-step recovery program, right? And typically, from what I've seen, the husband just clamps down. It's like control aspect to everything possible. And so they don't want them out. They don't want them having social situations. They don't want them meeting with other women. They don't want them doing anything, right?
Right.
And so that just that circumstance is really difficult as well. And then third, I would just say, like, the shame aspect of it for a woman, I feel is just so much. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a man, so I don't want to speak for men. But for a woman, that shame aspect is through the roof. For a lot of those things that we're talking about, like this, the different socially, you know, what's acceptable, what's not, right? Women in our community or culture are typically supposed to be like the guardians of virtue, right? You know, the guardians of that whole chastity aspect and things like that, you know, and to admit that I'm actually the one that's out, you know, being promiscuous or doing things like that, the shame aspect is just overwhelming.
Well, and I would say the shame aspect there, like, it also reflects into when we start working on healthy sexuality. Like, you'll have a lot of men come into sex addiction treatment that are like, yeah, my normal male sex drive is just a little out of control, and that's what I got to work on.
I just like it more than others.
You know, but that's how some of us are, us big testosterone guys. But I very rarely hear a woman come into sex addiction recovery that says, my desire for sex, my want for sex, it's just a little too high right now. It's like, there's something so wrong with me that I enjoy sex, that I want sex, that I seek it out. Yeah, so I think that shame factor is really, really different.
Right. Well, and then also, like, when you think about pornography addiction, right? More and more women are becoming addicted to pornography. And that was a big accelerator for me early on in my life, was this period of time where I had a lot of access to pornography. But pornography is all about looking at women's bodies. And so as a woman, if I'm addicted to pornography, then I'm coming in with a whole new set of shame, because it's not a man looking at a woman, it's, you know, and there can be gender stereotypes there. There can be, like, sexual orientation questions as a woman coming in, you know, like, is this what do I want? What above, you know, and it just, like, it's through the roof, you know, that shame aspect of, well, I'm looking at pornography, but I'm looking at women's bodies, but I don't consider myself, you know, homosexual, but I am struggling with this. And just that whole dichotomy is just really difficult for women to even wrap their brains around. I think it's really hard.
Well, and when I came on your podcast a while ago, and we talked about consent, and I remember one of the things I was talking about, going back to this shame idea, and even for women just coming into recovery, you know, we talked about how, generally speaking, our society acknowledges and gives permission for men that, of course, they have desire. They have sexual desire. But we don't do that for women. Like, we talk about women in terms of they need to be desirable, but we don't talk to them about what they desire. Just, and as you were saying, they need to be desirable, but not too desirable, whatever that means, And whoever's judging whether that they've done
it
right or not.
We'll be the judge of that.
Fortunately, there's a lot of people who will take that role. But again, I find with a lot of women coming in, even with partners, there's this whole sexual piece for them that has been untouched.
Yeah.
Or negatively touched, but underdeveloped.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of this, we're just talking about, like, and I used to say, you need to reclaim your sexuality. And what I started learning to say is, you need to claim it.
Yeah, there's no re
like,
part, right?
We're not reclaiming
right,
something.
It's
like,
claiming.
You never got to own it. Other people have always owned female sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, institutions, men, nothing personal, John.
I'll take it.
But they have felt threatened with women owning mm-hmm. their own sexuality. And that is very frightening for women to own their sexuality. So yeah, women are looking at porn and it's doing a lot of confusing things for them.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because they haven't really examined and explored their sexuality.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, from, I would say, the history of the world, right, men have owned women's sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that we've ever, like you're saying, there's no reclaim. Like, I don't know that we've ever really
yeah.
claimed that for ourselves. And I think that's a huge problem that women face coming
uh-huh.
into recovery. I've talked several times on my own podcast just about this TV series that I love called Bones.
Oh, yeah.
It's over now, which was like a super sad day for me. Super sad.
But it's always existing
on
Netflix.
On Netflix.
Well, it's on Netflix for real, and I own all 10 seasons, so I'm okay. But
you're double covered.
I'm double covered.
But no news stories.
Right, but the main character in that show, Temperance, right? She owns her sexuality,
mm-hmm.
like, in a really big, significant way. And I remember, because, like, that kind of coincided with my early recovery, like, my love of Bones and then
mm-hmm.
early recovery all happened at the same time. And I mean, countless episodes I would sit and watch and just sob.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember one time watching that and being like, here are men that respect her, you know,
uh-huh.
work with her or for her, want to date her, and yeah, it's fiction, I get it, but she owns her sexuality. Like, she
yeah.
talks about her desire for sex, she talks about her own sex drive, she talks about so many different things, and I remember thinking, okay, like, I know it's fiction, one day, though, that is going to be my life.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
one day I'm going to be able to own my own sexuality
yeah.
in a way that really works for me, in a way that, and I think that
mm-hmm.
like you're saying, women are not allowed to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's socially, it's just not allowed.
Well, or they're not even allowed, I think, as part of who they are as a person, they've got this sexual side to them. But I remember watching Bones kind of when it was first starting, and, you know, I get told a lot that I'm too much. I'm too intense, I'm too this, I'm too outspoken.
Right.
I was told a couple months ago that I articulate my opinions too well, and that's threatening. Oh, okay.
Wow. okay, yeah.
So I get told like things like that a lot, and I remember stumbling upon Bones and just watching her and thinking, she's too much, except she's not.
Except she's not.
I mean, she is just who she is, and people roll with that, and she expects them to roll with
mm-hmm.
that. She doesn't apologize. I mean, yes, if she steps on toes, she's like, hey, I'm sorry about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't then shrink and not be her strong self.
Right.
Right? So not surprising that she can, in a strong way, own her sexuality, because she's owning all parts of herself.
Right. Right. I would say that, you know, that's a huge step forward, just to be able to own your own opinion
mm-hmm.
as a woman, right? And be unapologetic about it. I know I actually, speaking of mixed meetings, I sat in a mixed meeting and listened to this man complain about how much his wife apologized all the time. And he did it like a couple weeks in a row. Maybe it was even 4 or 5 weeks in a
mm-hmm.
row. And I remember thinking, like, what's wrong with apologizing?
Mm-hmm.
And then also remembering, and then also recognizing in my own life, like, I don't need to apologize for existing,
mm-hmm.
for having an opinion, right? For this being too
for
much.
Disagreeing.
For disagreeing. Like, I don't need to apologize for that. And I've really tried consciously to stop apologizing for all of those types of things.
Uh-huh.
But as a woman, again, with this whole, like, be sexy but not too sexy, it's like, you know, you're too much or you're not enough, right? Like,
uh-huh.
I think from the male perspective, we get a lot of, it's too much, and I think you're too much, and I think from the female perspective, the own shame that we put on each other, it's we're not enough.
Yeah.
And so as a woman, we're kind of caught in this dynamic all the time of two extremes, you know, desirable, but not too desirable. Too much, but, you know, not enough. Like
strong, just, but weak.
Right. You know, this
and
whole...
helpless.
Right. This whole thing. And I don't know that there are a lot of really good examples out there for women. I think there are starting to be more and more on how to own your who you are unapologetically. And that's all aspects. That's your opinion. That's your body. That's your sexuality. That's... you know, your desires, what you want from life. Like, I'm not perfect at this by any means. Like, I am still struggling, as you both probably know. But I, you know, I'm trying to own that more of who I am and what I want and what that looks like.
That's something I've really appreciated in the news this week. You know, James Cameron, the Avatar director, the comment he made about how...
Wonder Woman.
What a crappy female heroine Wonder Woman was. And then I really appreciated Patty Jenkins' response to that, the Wonder Woman director, and many responses to that. And I think it was Patty Jenkins that said, there's not an ideal woman heroine. Like, we have a lot of examples of strong women, and we need more examples of strong women. I really appreciated that response to something that was really thoughtless and really... sexist and not really well thought through.
No, I think it's really challenging. It's really challenging to be a woman in today's society. Like, what the standard is, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. You know, who you want to be, who society wants you to be, you know, who this group of society wants you to be. Like, I think it's just really challenging. And so all of that spills over into a woman trying to find recovery, you know, or trying to find help, you know, whatever that looks like for them, you know, because of so many of those stereotypes, what is available to a man for recovery is not always available to women in recovery, you know, where a man
or
walks
if it's
in,
available, women have to go through 10 steps to get it.
Right.
Whereas men may have to go through two.
Where a man walks into a room and sees a room full of men with the same problem, and they instantly feel acceptable, support, the shame starts to fall off. A woman walks into that room without a single woman and just feels more broken, right?
Like, and feels more isolated.
More isolated. I am abnormal. I am broken. There is something wrong with me, you know, and so trying to get through all of that for women is really difficult.
Yeah. And again, that's where I'd highlight the work that you're doing with Worth Recovery is so needed. And we've heard, and I'm sure... you've heard too. We hear from our colleagues in the CSAC community how much they love Worth Recovery. And how glad they are that it's around. So can you remind our listeners, Amy, how do they find you? How do they find Worth Recovery?
Yeah. So thank you for that too, by the way. So Worth Recovery, it's at the website, worthrecovery.com, W-O-R-T-H recovery.com. It's in the iTunes store. The podcast is. It's on the Google Play store. It's on the Podbean app. So you can find it all those places. We have the podcast. We just recently added Shannon, who's blogging for us about her own experience in recovery. I'm really excited about that. She's just kind of starting out, but like I said earlier, I'm single and she's married. And so having that different perspective, I think, is really valuable to kind of listen to her experiences and stories. And so I'm excited about that. I also offer recovery coaching, and I coach both men and women. We do have, though I started with the idea that I'm only, like, this is for women. Like, I don't care if men listen. We do have a really large male following. We have a lot.
And good for men.
Yeah.
Good for men not to hear that and say, oh, this isn't for me.
They said she, so this is not for me.
Exactly. Exactly. Good for men to say, no, I'm going to listen to a female. Because I think in our society, a lot of times, men aren't used to listening to females talk unless they're lower than them, which then they can dismiss. But that's not true of all men. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good. Well, just like kind of a thought that popped into my head on that is I get really tired, like in this aspect of a woman trying to own my own sexuality, who I am, blah, blah, blah. I get really tired of men trying to tell me how to do that because they don't know. They're not, and no offense to men, like, but they're not females. And so they don't know what it's like to live as a female in sex addiction. And they can, offer a lot of support and a lot of empathy, and I have felt that from amazing amounts of men. Like, I mean, my first therapist was a male therapist, and I would say that probably did more for healing my own relationship with men than anything else, you know? But there's a lot of empathy there, but they're not women, and they haven't grown up as a woman, you know, even in the same family. Like, men and women are treated differently, you know? And so I get really tired of listening to men try to tell me how to solve my own problems. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to start this work, was because I think it's about time that women get to have a say in women's recovery.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not just driven by men. And so we do have a large male following, and I coach both men and women in recovery, and that's been really, really good for me as well, and just trying to move things forward. We do events also at Worth Recovery. We have this coming up year. I just put all these dates together just this morning. We have coming up in 2018, we'll have events in Salt Lake City in February, in Atlanta in either May or June. We're still working on a date there. And then back in Seattle in October.
Great.
So we've got three events going on next year, and we're just continuing to kind of expand our work.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you for being on today.
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, both John and Jackie have been on the Worth Recovery podcast.
Yes.
And I have lots of listeners. In fact, I just talked to one yesterday who was like, I re-listened to the episodes with John about big emotions because I just can't handle my life right now. And there was just a lot of value there. Big emotions with John, and we talked about consent with Jackie, which was awesome. And so thank you for sharing your work with us too.
Yeah.
You're welcome. So we want to remind you at the end of this episode that your story matters. Remember, there's something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com.
This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I'm learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.